Wine, Work, and Passion is brought to you by the Napa Valley Wine Academy, America's premier wine school and two-time winner of the WSET Global Wine Educator of the Year Award. You can find a course that's right for you at NapaValleyWineAcademy.com and use the code in our show notes for a special discount. Welcome, wine enthusiasts and job seekers. I'm your host, Karen Wetzel, and Wine, Work, and Passion is the podcast where we inspire you to make a career out of your passion for wine. Today, I'm honored to introduce you to Elizabeth Viana, winemaker and GM of the famed Chimney Rock Winery in the Stags Leap District here in Napa Valley. Her story of going from medical school to making world-class Cabernet Sauvignon in one of the greatest wine regions in the world will inspire you. And she offers great advice to help you start on your journey too. But before we get to our interview, I just wanted to take a second and tell you about an exciting program from the Napa Valley Wine Academy. If you love wine and you love travel, check out our Wine Education Abroad program, featuring life-changing learning adventures in some of the most famous wine regions in the world. Just head over to NapaValleyWineAcademy.com and look for the travel tab. These are amazing small group trips and space is limited, so don't delay if you want to get in on it. Now, let's meet my guest, Elizabeth Viana. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you today?
Hi, Karen. I'm doing well. How are you? Good.
Thanks for being on Wine, Work, and Passion. We really appreciate your expertise. Can you tell the audience who you are and what you do in the wine industry?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. My name is Elizabeth Viana, and I am the winemaker and the general manager at Chimney Rock Winery in Napa.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for letting us know that. And we're going to flesh that out in a bit, guys. So hang in there with us. Elizabeth and I ran into each other. We've bumped into each other a whole bunch of times, but I'm good friends with a few people that she works with, and I hang out at Chimney Rock a lot. We were members for a period of time, and I've done some training for them and got to know Elizabeth that way. And we got talking one day over the bar, having a glass of Chimney Rock, and just, you know, was very fascinated by her knowledge and enthusiasm and, you know, being here in cab country in Napa Valley and being a cab house, your style, Elizabeth, is so unique. And I really wanted to just share your ideas with the audience. And, you know, you also oversee a lot of jobs. And of course, that's the point of this podcast is jobs. So we're gonna flesh that out with you. And you're going to give us, I know you're going to give us some great insights as to how to follow in your footsteps or other people's footsteps as well. So what was in your glass the last time you had a glass of wine?
Oh, that's a funny question. It's funny because I make Cabernet, I tend to at home drink more white wine and rosé, yeah, just to break from, you know, so I go lighter. So I actually had a glass of Fodi di San Gregorio Falanghina. It was what I had. Was that Sunday night? I think it was Sunday night, which is one of the wines in the Trilotto family portfolio, actually. So we get
What was it called again?
It's Fodi di San Gregorio.
Right.
It's a wine producer in Campania. So they do Falanghina, they do Greco di Tufa, okay. They do Smaglianico as well. Beautiful wines. Highly recommend. Yeah.
Oh, sounds wonderful. I know I got a peek at your international portfolio for Trilotto.
It's
for
good.
Those who don't know, Trilotto family, the Trilotto family owns Chimney Rock as well as many other brands. And boy, you have a great import and international portfolio. Oh, I wish I could get my hands on it. Very good. Excellent. Okay. So tell us about you. What do we need to know about you? Who are you? Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about, you know, your education and just how you start us at the beginning, if you'd like, wherever that
is. Sure. I mean, I'll mention where I'm from because it's probably pretty unusual in Napa Valley. I was actually born in Brazil, and I grew up between Brazil and the East Coast. My dad was a chemical engineer who kind of his career took him back and forth between those two countries, and ended up going to college on the East Coast. I went to Vassar, and at that time, my plan was to go to medical school. I was pre-med in college and decided that I would go sow my wild oats in New York City before I went to medical school and just live and work. So I got a job at a hospital, first in research in neurobiology, and then I ended up transitioning to a clinical lab and ended up spending a few years there because I was really enjoying my time in New York in my 20s. And so in that period, and, you know, I grew up with wine at the table. My dad loved wine and he had a reverence for it. I don't think I really thought about it seriously until my New York years. So I had a really good friend from college whose dad had collected Bordeaux in the 70s. And he was generous enough to share some of these amazing first growths with us. So I got to start with some pretty amazing wines. You know, my friend Roy used to come over with like Mouton and Lafitte and Latour and Figeac and all these wines that his dad like had collected, but wasn't really that into and was generous enough to share with us. So kind of fell in love with wine drinking it, to be honest.
And that's unusual because when most of us think about where we started with our journey, wine journey, it's usually, well, my generation, it was like Boone's Farm. You know, the millennials probably started with White Zinfandel. And, you know, very few people get right into the big Bordeaux right away. So that's pretty interesting. Most young people would make a face if they tried it, I think.
Yeah, and I won't lie. I mean, I had had my fair share of, you know, Gallo Hardy Burgundy and Sutterholm Zinfandel in college, you know, because it's what we could afford. But
Right, exactly.
But that is the point at which I really started to think, oh my God, this beverage is something much more than a beverage, right? Yeah. And I started to read about, you know, wine regions and taste different wines of the world. And New York obviously is a great city to be in if you want to learn about wine, right? Yeah. There's so many tastings, so many great retail shops. It's just, it's a great place to be, all those great restaurants. So one thing led to another, started like reading more and more about wine. And I literally had an aha moment. I was at a pre-auction tasting at Christie's. And Christian Wex talked about inheriting Chateau Petrus and not knowing what to do. And he decided to go to UC Davis to pursue a wine education. And the UC Davis thing sparked a question, which was, oh, you can study winemaking. How cool is that?
Yeah. And so I looked, knew you could go to school for it.
That's right. That's right. And I really didn't know that much about how you would even what the trajectory would be. So I read up on the UC Davis program and called them in and got an application sent and ended up applying to their master's program instead of medical school. And here I am 27 years later. So,
wow. Well, I don't know if the world's better off with you as a winemaker than a doctor, but I know I'm happy that you're a winemaker.
Yeah, it's just a slightly different way of curing people, right?
Right. Well, you know, and there is, a lot of people don't realize there is an awful lot of science to winemaking. I mean, it doesn't just happen. It's not magic, right? There's science to it. And every winery has their own lab, or most of them have their own labs, or, you know, send samples out to the lab. So it is a very scientific process. It's not just all Mother Nature. So there's
that's absolutely true. Yeah. And I think also what drew me, I also love the arts. Like I love music and I love literature and I have a very creative part to my being. And I feel like winemaking actually captures a melding of art and science. There are many things that are scientific, certainly, but what makes great wine in the end really isn't science necessarily. Right. It's the art. And so I think that is what really spoke to me. It's that melding of the two things.
Right. Yeah. That's so important to know. And, you know, for listeners, if you have a penchant for science and wine, you know, you're in a good place. That's something you can actually act on and, you know, use to progress. So when you left UC Davis before the Chimney Rock gig. What were your some of your in-between jobs? Or did you come right to Jimmy Rock?
Yeah, so at Davis, while I was getting my master's, I actually did an internship at Trefethen. So I did my very first winery internship. I was actually a TA for Carol Meredith as well at Davis. So she used to teach the intro to wine class, and I TA'd that class, which was really fun. And then right after I finished, I had actually finished Davis. I was still working on my thesis, but had finished the coursework. I did an internship at Chimney Rock in 1999.
Oh, okay.
And so that was my second internship in the wine business. And this is kind of a funny part of the story. After Chimney Rock, I went and became a lab director at Napa Wine Company, became assistant winemaker there, spent 2 years there. It was a great place to work. Lots of amazing people making wine under that roof. For those of you who don't know, Napa Wine Company is a custom crush place, probably one of the first in Napa. And at the time I was there, from 2000 to 2002, there were many, many great winemakers making wine there, from Celia Welch to Aaron Green to Heidi Barrett was making her wines there. Nickel & Nickel, this was before they had a winery. So it was a great school of winemaking for me to go to Napa Wine Company for a couple of years. And then, ironically, the assistant winemaker at Chimney Rock in 2002, Lyle Bacchus was her name, decided she was bored with wine and wanted to go to medical school. So she now delivers babies in Chicago. And I was invited back to Chimney Rock by Doug Fletcher, then winemaker, to become his assistant. So it's
That's
all one
really
big circle.
Ironic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very ironic. Yeah. For those of you, I want to elaborate a little bit more on this whole concept of a custom crush facility, because, you know, everybody, a lot of people, I don't say everybody, but a lot of people think that when you, you know, you see a Napa wine label, you know, at a restaurant or whatever, that they must all be attached to some big grand building. Like we have so many of them here, but that's not really true. There's a lot of winemakers. What building your own winery, buying all the equipment can be, you know, quite expensive. And a lot of winemakers, especially in, as you know, in their beginning stages, will go and make wine. There's facilities that will sort of, you know, allow you to use the equipment. You for a price, obviously you rent space, you rent equipment. You know, sometimes they even have people that will, you know, do things for you, punch downs or whatever, but you know, you can be there making your wine. It's just not your equipment, and your facility, your storage facility, your winemaking facility. And it's really spawned a lot of great, great winemakers, as you said, and, wines that you would never think are made at a custom crush facility would sort of shock you. But anyway, it's a very cool thing we have here in Napa. And it's just something that not everybody, it's sort of a good kept secret, but it's not really a secret. Nothing wrong with it. So it's not like there are, you know, some contract wineries. That's a whole different thing. That's big volume, cheap labels. No. This is usually much higher end wines. Let's talk about Chimney Rock first. Let's do that first. Tell us a little bit about Chimney Rock.
Yeah, so Chimney Rock, we're located here at the base of the Vaca Mountains at the south end of the Stags Leap District in Napa Valley. Chimney Rock has been here for almost 40 years, and it was founded in 1980 by Hack and Stella Wilson. If you come by Chimney Rock, you'll notice very unusual architecture. It is Cape Dutch architecture, which is traditional of South African wineries. And our original founding owners had lived in South Africa for many years and brought the architecture to Napa Valley. They sold the property to the Trelato family in the early 2000s. Because their kids really weren't interested in running the business. And the Trelato family is this amazing wine family. They've been in almost every realm of the wine industry as importers, as distributors. And in the late 90s, Tony Trelato, the patriarch of the family, decided that they wanted to be involved in wineries and be winery owners as well. So they purchased Rutherford Hill in 1996 and Chimney Rock in 2000. And they really brought this new basically cash influx to really, I would say, fulfill Chimney Rock's potential. Hack had done a great job at establishing it as a high-end cab producer, but we definitely needed some investment. So they planted some more cab vineyards for us right here on the estate, built a brand new winery facility, which is just kind of a winemaker's dream, and you know, really allowed us to raise the bar on production. We are dedicated to producing Stags Leap District Cabernet. That's kind of our focus. So we have about 105 acres of grapes right around the winery, mostly Cabernet, a little bit of Merlot, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, Malbec. And then we produce a few white wines, which come off of a vineyard that the family owns in Rutherford. So we do a white blend and a Sauvignon Blanc and a Sauvignon Gris. We do a couple of rosés. But Stags Leap District Reds are our focus. That's basically what we've done for as long as we've been here. So very terroir-driven, really trying to tell the tale of this AVA with our reds. It's a classic region, as you know, Karen, for Cabernet. I mean, Stags Leap District is about as good as it gets. So
yeah. And your vineyards, most of your reds are estate grown, right?
Everything is estate grown. Everything. Every wine we make is estate grown.
Even the basic Napa cab.
We don't do a basic Napa. Everything Stags Leap District. Yeah.
They're all single vineyards, right?
We are 100% estate. No, some of them are blended wines from multiple blocks, but some of them are single vineyards. Yeah, but everything is estate grown at Chimney Rock.
And it's all right there surrounding the winery, correct?
It's all here except for our estate vineyard of whites, which is in Rutherford. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You can't necessarily grow white the same place you can grow red. And a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, when you drive through, whether it's the Silverado Trail where you're off of or Highway 29, we only have the two main roads going up and you see all these beautiful estates. You'd be surprised how few, you know, there's a lot of them that you think, oh, well, that must be their vineyards. Not always. And it's very prestigious that you guys have your vineyards right there in your backyard. And you have a great tour. So, well, let's talk a little bit about the single vineyard. Give us some examples of some of the single vineyards and why do they taste differently?
Yeah, so one of the things that we were really starting to notice when I started here at Chimney Rock was that within our 105 acres, there were these differences in Cabernet from the north end to the south end to the hillsides on the east side and the western side valley floor. And we saw some really interesting distinctions. You know, the north end of the estate has perhaps riper, jammier fruit. The south end tends to be a little bit more expressive of old world Cabernet, some more dried herbs. So we really started to toy with the idea that there was the potential for multiple Cabernets that told slightly different tales. And we literally, I think, we had done a couple of single vineyards in 97, 98 before I got here. 99, we bottled one of our hillside Cabernets, Alpine Vineyard, for the first time. And then by 2005, we had a few of them. And we now do about 7 single vineyard calves from different sites on the properties. And they are different, not just for climate, microclimate differences, but also clonal differences. We have different rootstocks depending on the site. So not every Cabernet is the same. It's kind of fun to showcase these nuanced differences that, you know, that are just fun.
Yeah. You have a great tour that you guys offer on it's like an oversized golf cart. I forget how many people it holds.
It is a golf cart.
And Bill and I were lucky enough to take that tour about a year ago. And basically you get on this little this big golf cart, and you've got a driver who's your educator. We had Mike, so you know how good he is. And basically, he's got a bag full of single vineyard wines, and you drive to each of the vineyards. They're all connected, so it's not you're not driving for miles and miles. You're right there. The big vineyard is sort of broken down into smaller vineyards, and you get out and eat, you know, the guide will tell you about the soils and the, like you say, the terroir, the different trellising systems and, you know, the different elevation and all that. And while he's telling you that, you're drinking that wine from that vineyard. And then you get back in the little thing and you go down, you know, 10, 15 feet away, sometimes very close, and out you go and another bottle of single vineyard wine, another story about the vineyard. And I don't know, I think we tasted 5 or 6 wines. I can't remember, but I know you still offer that. And I have to tell you, having been in the business for 30 some, well over 30 years, and having been on the supplier side and the distributor side, I mean, I've taken a lot of private tours of winery facilities and vineyards and all that. But I have to tell you, it really brought me back. It's like, oh, I forgot how special this is. And I wasn't with 50 people either, which was nice, because normally when you're taking distributor trips, there's a group of you. But, you know, it really felt, I thought, you know, this is what somebody coming to Napa and really wanting to understand it, it's worth the extra money to immerse yourself. You're not just sitting at a table or standing at a bar, tasting the wines and having someone tell you about them. You're actually immersed in it. And I cannot tell you, if you're going to treat yourself to one really beautiful tasting, that's the one I would recommend for anybody. It's just such a great experience. And I'm not saying that for any other reason than I from the bottom of my heart, Bill and I afterward were like blown away by it. So
I love that. Yeah. And it really just draws that illustration, the connection between land. Like, what is it that makes wine so unique? You know, this translation right. from different pockets of the earth into a bottle of wine, it just pinpoints how special it all is.
Yeah. And really, no matter what winery you're going to, if you can get a tour either inside of the winery or in the vineyards, it's always, you know, it's a nice little upgrade for yourself, but it's worth it because it's such a bigger experience. And, you know, you can go into winery tours and that's nice, but, you know, tanks all look the same. Barrels pretty much look the same. And I mean, some of them design their wineries a little differently than others, but the vineyard is the story, you know, and it was such a treat. So how much of the vineyard activity do you oversee, or do you oversee all of it?
We have a VP of winemaking that oversees all of the Trelato vineyards, but okay. I am kind of chief of our own vineyard. So I work with him. I'm really, myself and my assistant winemaker, we're the people who are in those vineyards kind of year round. We have a farming company that does the work, but I'm very much involved in everything from pruning to canopy management to right. All of it really, to planting decisions. So yeah.
And let's talk about some of the roles then in the vineyard, some of the roles that are in the winery, you know, from the entry level, pushing the broom around or pumping wine from one tank to another, or, you know, I mean, I know you have a farming, so you don't really hire vineyard folks per se. You have a farming company.
We don't. We have one full-time vineyard worker or ranch. I would call him our estate manager, Flavio, who's been with us for over 20 years. And he is here year-round with us. He is gotcha. Our employee. So okay. he actually works with our farming company okay. as well. He's kind of our eyes in the vineyard. You know, yeah. I'm not there every single day, but I'm there a lot. But gotcha. he really is. Okay. Yeah, so we don't hire, but we work with our farming company. So we'll have meetings with the vineyard management team. And even on days where we're maybe pruning or doing canopy management, I might go out there and, you know, see how the crews are doing. So we work pretty closely with them.
Yeah. And that's really very common here because there's, you know, people think the only time we need vineyard workers is during harvest, but that's not true. We have winter pruning right now. You have tilling. There are activities, but they're not activities where you need a full-time crew 365 days a year, you know, right. So, you know, so it's really common to, you know, these companies that you're referring to, they know what they're doing. They're experts at it. And
that's right.
And they hire the best and they train their employees and they follow your direction, you know, for how you want things done. So that's pretty common. Well, then let's talk about the winery positions then. So like I say, from the guy pumping wine to your yeah. role. What kind
well,
of
we're
do you
we're a pretty small team actually at Chimney Rock. So under me, there's an assistant winemaker, a cellar master who also doubles as facility supervisor, and then we have a crew of three. So it's a team of six, and we have Flavio in the vineyard. So
right, nice.
Fairly small, but I oversee that team. I work very closely also with our DTC team. So I may be involved with things like hiring a retail room manager or training our retail staff on the wines right. and the vineyards and education. We're pretty, I like the way our company works in that, like, even though I don't directly oversee these positions, I may be involved in interviewing somebody who might be hired for supply chain, the person who's going to be buying things like glass and corks and all right. this. So there's, you know, it takes a village to make great wine.
It
right?
does. It does. And when we say DTC, we're talking direct to consumer. So yes. those are the people that are helping those who want to buy wine online or club, membership management.
Our club manager. Yeah.
Right, we have shipments going out to club members or maybe in addition to their normal shipments, there's something on sale or whatever. So phone calls to be made and all that. And when you talk about your retail staff, that's really you're talking about your hospitality staff, correct?
Mostly, yeah. And our club manager as well. Yeah. And then we'll also work on the trade side. We'll work with our brand management team, right? So that's the team that's really working at how our wine is being distributed. So not the wine that's sold directly here at the winery, but that right. the wine that goes into distribution throughout the U.S. and maybe abroad as well. So there's a lot of moving parts, obviously, and they're all interconnected. And I seem to navigate every single part of those components.
You've got your hands in everything. Well, that's good,
yes,
though.
Which
that's
is
really
pretty fun.
So of all the wines you make, there's quite a few that are not nationally distributed that they can only get through the winery, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, we only distribute 4 wines nationally. I probably make about 21 total wines.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
There's quite a few that are just direct and some real small production gems. I mentioned the Bordeaux varieties that we grow here, but you know, I think we've talked about this, but we grow one single row of an Italian grape called Fiano on the property as well.
Yes.
And we bottle.
In fact, I've tasted it.
We bottle a whopping 12 to 16 cases of that wine a year.
So what is that, like a small barrel, half a barrel?
It's fermented in kegs. It's not even enough for a barrel. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But that's cool because, you know, it gives you, I'm sure, you know, you're such a you're so well known for your cabs, but it kind of maybe gives you a little diversion, little toy to play with, you know, to give you a little break from all the great cabs. I know this is going to be asking a mother about her favorite child. What is your favorite child that you make?
Yeah, I really don't have one. You know, I think all our wines are pretty special and that they tell a different tale. I have a real deep fondness for our white blend that we make, the Élevage Blanc, because I was very, very connected to Tony Trillato, who is, you know, the patriarch of the family. And that was kind of his dream child. He wanted to make something that was a white Bordeaux style wine that was with a Napa twist. And I worked on that project from the beginning and made that wine what it is. And so that's something that I really like. Treasure because we right. had this journey together of this wine, but the vineyards here are spectacular and every wine's pretty special. So I certainly can't pick favorites.
Right. I have to tell you, I don't know. I can't remember if we've talked about this, but way back in my distributor life back in Ohio, when I used to be a sales manager, a sales rep, and then a sales manager there, it's now a Southern Glazer's house, but it used to be called the Hammer Company. I don't know if you remember that name or not, but we were your distributor. And well, not just for Chimney Rec, we distributed the entire Terlato portfolio, but it was not Terlato at the time. It was back when it was Paterno.
Paterno. Yeah. Yep. Paterno and, Imports.
And I have to really attribute a lot of my interest in learning more and more about wine, and especially when it came to international wines, because you really, you know, if you're going to sell it, you have to know it. And it was really helpful to sell those types of brands. And every year or two, Paterno would come in and do a winemaker tour, and they would come in with winemakers from all over the world. And we'd have these grand tastings in like this big ballroom in Ohio. And we'd invite all of our clients, our restaurant buyers, our retail buyers, collectors, that type of thing. And they'd get to meet the winemakers. And then as sales reps, they'd give us special time with the wine teams. And I really cut my teeth on the Paterno, now Terlato portfolio.
I did so, not know that. That's great. That's a great story.
Yeah, and we sold Chimney Rock. It was one of the brands at the time. And we sold Rutherford. In fact, Rutherford Hill, which is your sister company, I actually won a big contest selling their wines. And I was awarded a personally signed Guy Buffet lithograph, and it was signed with my name on it, like to Karen Wetzel.
Oh, cool.
And that was all because I sold a bunch of Rutherford Hill at the time. So anyway,
nice.
Merlot, that was the big one. It still is one of my favorite Merlots. So anyway, I digress. We get off track here, but that's okay. That's what the conversation's all about. So so let's talk about you. Two other areas I wanted to ask you about. One is, you mentioned Stag's Leap District a couple of times, and I know you're part of the Wine Growers Association. So can you talk a little bit about the association and then some of the roles you've had or plan to have?
Yeah, so it's a pretty tight little neighborhood. As you know, it's only 3 miles long and 1 mile wide. And Stag's Leap District Wine Growers Association is probably one of the first kind of trade organizations for an AVA. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's basically a nonprofit that's educating the wine world about what is it that's special about Stag's Leap District. So I started getting involved with them pretty early on, I think, when I became winemaker here in 2005. And I've been on the board many, many years. I've been president a couple of times. I've been VP a couple of times. It's a great way to stay connected to your neighbors, I think. Mm-hmm. And actually, the Stag's Leap District Wine Growers does something that is really unusual. We actually sell a wine collection for the nonprofit. It's the main source of revenue for the organization. And so every October 15th through December 15th, the collection is released of whatever the current vintage is. And there's a wine bottle from each of the producer members in the Stag's Leap. And we've been doing that for years and years and years and years. So That's kind of unique. I think the collection these days is probably about $2,000. But it's a really unique, wine gift, or if you're starting a cellar, it's a great place to start because you're getting a little bit of each of the great producers here in the neighborhood.
Right. How many members are there?
I believe we're currently 17. Yeah.
I heard there are about 25 producers in Stag's Leap. Are there that many? Maybe not.
Yeah, there might be like 22, maybe.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's a relatively small region by comparison. Funny, I actually joined, I live in Oak Knoll right by Alston Park. I live in the Oak Knoll district. And last year I joined their Growers Association.
Oh, okay.
And it was kind of funny. They had a non-growers membership, and you have to fill out a form, and they want to know, well, what do you bring to the table? Well, as a wine educator and that type of thing. They were excited that I'm their first non-grower member. So, and you mentioned Trefethen. We have our annual meeting coming up next week at Trefethen.
So, okay. That's great.
Anyway, funny stuff. And then let's talk about the Napa Valley Vintners. Let's talk about who they are and what you do with them.
Yeah, so, you know, I think as you work in the Napa community and we are faced with we've had some challenges in the last few years, starting to see some signs of climate change, needless to say. We've had to deal with wildfires. I mean, I think I reached a place in my career where I really felt like it was time to make some contributions to the bigger picture of Napa Valley and to really, like, what can I do to help the future and have an impact. And Napa Valley Vintners is basically a marketing organization that is here to protect and enhance the Napa Valley and its wine industry. It does a tremendous amount of charity for the Valley, millions and millions of dollars towards children's health care, fire prevention, you name it, they've done it. They're really an important organization in the Valley. And I felt like being a part of that, I actually they started a new leadership program, which was basically cultivating future leaders. And I was part of their first cohort who graduated last year from that 1 year program. And that led me to then think about running for the board. And I'm just a board member, but learning a lot from some extraordinary people like Doug Schaefer and Beth Novak and Andy Erickson's our current chair, Jack Bittner, some amazing people in the Valley who've done amazing things. And it's just been a great, you know, learning experience and a great way to maybe give back to all the things that I've been so lucky to get.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Premier Napa is coming up next week, right?
It is. Premier Napa Valley. Yes. Very excited.
Yeah, it's a good time to be in Napa because, you know, even if you don't want to go to the auction, there's a lot of sub-tastings kind of floating around, and it's an exciting time, really exciting time to be here. You know, when you talk about your relationships with the people at the Stag's Leap District Growers Association and then Napa Valley Vintners, you know, that's something that I've been here 8 years now, but I've certainly been to Napa, coming to Napa for many, many years. And it really always, one of the reasons why it's such a special place is not just because we make great Cabernet, that does make us special in that regard, but it really is the camaraderie among wineries and among employees and the sense of community. It's a great community to live in, whether you're in the wine industry or not. I think that all bleeds over to just the general population, and that, you know, and we have all had to pull together, you know, COVID with the wineries being closed for so long, and, you know, you guys all had to get creative and you shared. I know so many wineries that were sharing their ideas on how to stay open during COVID, and, you know, the earthquake hits and who's got tank space and who can lend a hand. And the same with the fires, you know, gosh, we've had really way too many fires just in the few years that I've been here. And there's always somebody there to lend a hand, to lend equipment, to lend facility, lend employees, whatever's needed. And it's really one of the things when you come to Napa that makes us very, very special. And if you get to experience that and talk to some of the winemakers and some of the owners, even better, because you'll really get a good sense of that. And if you want to learn more about Napa Vintners, by the way, you just go to napavintners.com, and they've got educational programs like Napa Rocks. I mean, I use material from that all the time. They're nice enough to let us use it, which is great. Anyway, let's talk about so people are listening and they're saying, gosh, I really want to follow in her footsteps. How would they do that? Do they need a degree in oenology like you had, or is there another way to, you know, get started?
You know, I would say the answer is it depends on where you want to make wine or what kind of winemaker you want to be. You don't need a degree to make home winemaking, right?
Like, right, of course not.
You know, lots of people who can make some wine in their home, and you can do that. I think a degree for me was probably the best path because I was coming from a completely different field and didn't come from a family that made wine or owned land. So I would say getting a degree is kind of the accelerated program.
I was going to say, it fast tracks you for sure.
You become part of a community of winemakers and that support system of professors that will help move you along, I think, in the future. But I certainly have met people in the industry who wanted to be a winemaker who I said, I think you probably could do it without.
Right.
And it may entail having a plant background or a different sort of background or, I mean, honestly, I'm sure there are winemakers in the Valley who started in the cellar, you know, and just worked their way through. My assistant winemaker did not go to Davis. She has a degree in molecular biology from Santa Cruz. She's a science girl, and she fell in love with wine. And the science background is certainly important, I would say. But I, you know, if you don't have a science background, I would encourage you to take some classes because if you really want to make wine, science is an important part and you want to make sure that science is something that you enjoy, right?
Right.
So I think that's important. I think the best way to kind of see if you're interested is working an internship, you know, before you even go borrow money to get a degree, go work in a winery. It is... it's probably different than what you imagine. It may sound glamorous. It's not quite as glamorous when you're actually doing the work. There's a lot of cleaning and it's very repetitive. Right. And but I think, you know, if I could have done things differently, I would have worked a harvest before I went to Davis.
Right.
But I was also, you know, I was in my late 20s already, so I just wanted to get to it.
Yeah, for the internships, you know, a lot of people hear that word, and I get a lot of phone calls from students and from friends and just from people that catch me on LinkedIn through the, from the podcast, and they say, I'm coming out to Napa for a week in the fall. I'd like to work a harvest. Doesn't work that way anymore. You know, it might in some parts of the country because they make wine everywhere, and you might be able to go, you know, grab some grapes. But here in Napa, it's an actual job, and it's not a full-time all-year commitment necessarily, but you get paid for it. You don't get paid a lot, but you do actually get paid for it. And it is a great way to dip your toe in the water. And I know many people, like you say, who started off testing the waters through an internship and then loved it and stayed.
Right.
And then moved up the ladder. So the best way to find those kinds of jobs, at least as far as my research, is just go to winejobs.com and type in the zip code for Napa, 94558, if you're curious. And if you want to do it in Napa or Sonoma, or even if you're in Texas. In Texas, or I mean, we make wine everywhere, right? All over the U.S.
That's right.
But, you know, type in the zip code and then in the keywords, just type in intern. And you'd be surprised. And it's not just during harvest, it's all year long. There's different kinds of interns that are needed. So it is a great way to test the waters and see how committed you want to be. And I know those are a lot, they're hard work, but can be a lot of fun too. So that's a good way to get in, I guess. That would be a good way to get in. Okay. Well, Elizabeth, anything else you want to add for our audience? Is there anything? Well, let's talk about how they can find Chimney Rock. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so our website is www.chimneyrock.com. You can go on our website and read a little bit more about us. Or I think the best way to get to know a winery is come and visit. I think nothing compares to tasting the wines and seeing our vineyards and meeting the people that are out here. So I hope that many of your listeners will come and see us after they hear the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're interested in working at Chimney Rock or any of the Terlato properties here or abroad, if you go to chimneyrock.com and you scroll down all the way to the bottom, you'll see a career tab, and that opens up a page that then gives you the link to the Terlato, all the Terlato career choices. So I know Terlato is a great company to work for. And I have a lot of friends. Well, you know, Deja and all half the gang now at Chimney Rock is Terlato, but also in at some of your other properties. So it's always great to what I call, they're my ex-cons, as I call them, from Constellation. So anyway, well, Elizabeth, I can't thank you enough for your time, your patience. We had a little technical glitch before we got started. Just, you know, for just being so generous with your knowledge and your time, and generous to me and generous to our audience. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for making such great wines.
We love your wines. You keep drinking it. You keep drinking it. I'll keep making it.
Right. And thanks to the audience. Thanks, guys, for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed this interview. It's kind of special in my heart. And we'll see you next time. Thanks to all of you for joining, and I hope today's show has inspired you to make a career out of your passion for wine. If you'd like to have a one-on-one career coaching session with me, just use the link in the show notes for more information or to schedule an appointment. This podcast is all about helping you follow your dreams, so feel free to send us your suggestions for guests or topics through our email link that's listed in the show notes. And it means an awful lot when you share us with friends or leave a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join us again for our next episode.